Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Cult of Hockey, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy of the Cult of Hockey. Welcome, Bruce.
Good day, David.
So you have a new post up, Bruce, at the Mighty Cult of Hockey, and it's that time of year where we're kind of, where usually the summer dealings are done. There might be a few late ones, but they're done. So people are putting together their lineup combinations and their roster, and that's what you've done today. I took a stab at some line combinations yesterday. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't exactly been a thrilling offseason. It's been much more thrilling for me as a Manchester United fan. You know, they signed Roman Lukaku, and they're about to sign another guy today. You know, that's where the you got to go to the Premier League for your thrills if you're an Oilers fan right now, you know, whichever team you're cheering for. What about your team, Bruce? Who do you cheer for?
Well, I'm a Barcelona fan, and in the premiership, I have an odd relationship in that I'm a fan of the league, but I'm not a specific fan of any team. Kind of a little soft spot for Spurs. I enjoy following the league, and I try not to get too caught up in team biases, or that's just how it worked out.
So the only other team I actually follow closely in all of professional sports is Manchester United. And really? I do it because for the last 10 years before this year, it was pretty hard to be an Oilers fan. So it was good to... I was a Manchester United fan before then, but I came to be more wrapped up in the team because it was good to have a team that was kind of a top dog rather than at the bottom all the time.
And it's nice to root for a team that doesn't suck.
And you know what? Manchester's also kind of a cold, like in terms of the soccer world, it's kind of the Edmonton of the soccer world, right? Cold, northern, industrial city that's had its glory through a major professional sports team. So that maybe there was that as well. So the Oilers have not done a whole heck of a lot. They've been working on Shirelli's top two priorities. And they're going to continue to be working on it. But I think I have a revised list of Peter Shirelli's top priorities here, Bruce. So priority one was getting McDavid signed on as value a contract as possible. That's the part he never said. And I think he really achieved that with the $12.5 million per year deal. The second one, he said the second priority is get Leon Draisaitl signed. But I think actually, Bruce, the second priority is to avoid a Leon Draisaitl offer sheet and do everything you can as the general manager to make sure that happens. Because if you can stop that from happening, then the other thing follows, then you sign him. But the worst thing that could happen to the Oilers in this offseason by far would be for Leon Draisaitl to get an offer sheet, because that would totally screw up their roster, not in terms of players, but in terms of their cap. It would not only give them less money to sign players in years to come, Bruce, it would also set expectations of the other players higher. So if Draisaitl gets $9 million, then suddenly everybody else wants an extra $1 million on their deal too. So I think it's an absolute disaster, and it could still happen.
Oh yeah.
And I think he's done everything he can. And in retrospect, the Eberle trade, the Pouliot slashing of his salary, it's all to create this huge amount of cap space that they can just easily. So every other GM who's thinking out there, I'm going to sign this guy, think, oh geez, he's got $15 million to play with, better not even bother.
Well, and looking at it from the other side, I would much prefer the Oilers and Draisaitl to reach an agreement as opposed to the Oilers him basically breaking ranks to sign with another team and then being obliged to match it to bring it back. I think that's a chemistry thing. And it creates a break between the team and the player in the first instance, and between the player and his teammates in the second instance. And it's actually that second one that concerns me more. I want a guy that wants to be an Oiler, full stop, signs here, stays here, doesn't entertain. You know, sure, as a negotiating tactic, no problem. As an actual move, then, you know, that's basically crossing the Rubicon.
Might be a post down the road to do. It'd be looking at Oilers players in the past who have had really acrimonious contract negotiations with the Oilers. And from that moment on, how long did they last with the team? And and I think we both, like, I can't put my finger on it right now. I haven't done the research, but I got a bad feeling about that. Like, if it, and it, I'm not saying it's that. It hasn't devolved into that. And even if he, you know, signs in mid-October, it doesn't necessarily mean it's that. But if it does kind of get personal and nasty and the players gets upset and the team gets upset, you know, I think Paul Coffey had those kind of negotiations with the Oilers.
Yes.
That's the one that comes to mind right off the top of my head. Any that pop into your mind?
Oh, well, Ryan Smith.
Yeah, Ryan Smith.
Remember they set the artificial deadline at the trade deadline, and when they were reportedly 100,000 apart, but they neither one was prepared to bridge that gap, that they pulled the plug on that disastrous trade for Ryan O'Meara, Robert Nelson, and Alex Plant.
Oh. Well, those are three pretty good players. Geez, are you ever a harsh critic of the Oilers? I don't know.
Yeah, that was a bad day in oil country. Remember they retired Messier's sweater that night, and Kevin Lowe wouldn't even come down to the ceremony because he knew he'd get booed by the fans. It was just a bad scene all the way around.
I'm just still reeling at your toxic comment about Alex Plant. I just don't know how to take that.
Here's a trivia question for you. All three of those guys were number 15 overall draft picks. It's actually a trivia answer. All three of them were number 15 overall draft picks. Wow. O'Meara, Nelson, and Plant.
Okay, so today on the podcast, today's topic is the Oilers roster. So what we're going to do is run down the roster briefly and talk about how it's shaping up. So let's start with, Bruce, your chart here. Tell me about this chart.
Okay.
I got it. It's in level of experience.
NHL experience, and it's rated by games played, actually total games played, which there's three numbers there, the age of the player on the left and his regular season plus playoff games played on the right.
Okay,
and
so if the
idea was just to look at the roster, like turn it over a different way and see how much experience we got on this team, and it's actually quite a lot. It's we've got a list here of 32 players, including 30 skaters with NHL experience, of which 26 are not even eligible for the Calder Trophy this year. So they've got enough experience to have burned their rookie status, and so non-rookies.
That's good.
There won't be rookies on this team. It's great.
Well, that's the first time in a long time, eh?
Yeah, well, that's what the post was about. And some of the lists of rookies in past years were depressingly long. Hard to succeed with 6 or 10 or 15 rookies in your lineup.
Here's another bad. I just something popped in my head, Bruce. Another bad blood negotiation. Mike Comrie.
He left. And the Corey Perry trade when they tried to claw back his bonus.
It's never good, so let's hope we don't see it here. You know what? In this negotiation with Draisaitl, like, I don't know, at least publicly, it's just really cool. It's not hot. Mm-hmm. It's not. Yeah. There's been a few little heated moments. I would think, you know, Brian Lawton's tweet about offer sheets heated things up. You know, obviously things that heat things up would be if we see a trade demand, right? Like, or the Oilers, or reporters, or people close to the Oilers starting to publish stories on possible trade destinations. You know, that'll heat it up fast. But we haven't seen any of that. Instead, we've seen the company line, we're going to get this done, and he'll be on the team next year.
I've heard Nicholson say that twice this week, and he said, he was asked yesterday if Oilers fans should be, what was the exact wording of it, worried about an offer sheet. And he said, no, they should be, he said they should be anxious, but they shouldn't be, what was the other word, terrified.
So yeah. He
kind of toned it down. Maybe we should be a little anxious until it's done, but he's 100% confident that he will get it done.
Yeah, he and Shirelli were spotted downtown getting matching, we're going to get this done tattoos on their arms.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty confident myself. Usually don't get that unless you're sure. Okay, the first line, Bruce. We're gonna go. I'm gonna go lines because in my I concocted these lines as fans.
Oh, okay.
Will do. Okay, so let's go off the lines because it's a little more.
Sure.
Okay, first line, Maroon, McDavid, and I have RNH. I'd like to see Ryan Nugent Hopkins, if he really is Joe Pavelski. If that's just not talk,
right.
If he really is, let's give him the Joe Pavelski treatment. And in San Jose, Pavelski's played consistently with some of the best centers on that team. Thornton and Couture. So if RNH is actually Joe Pavelski, like Todd McClellan has mentioned a few times, okay, play him with McDavid and see what happens because he could use the offense. He could use the boost. And I actually think there's going to be a lot of chemistry between those two players. They really move the puck well. They're smart. They can control the puck. And RNH will benefit. I don't think he's going to defer too much to McDavid. I think it might kind of ignite him. That's my theory.
That's a good theory. I mean, we need something to ignite RNH, and that's for sure. I mean, the dynamic offensive player that came into the Edmonton at 18 years old, that guy, I'm not sure where he's gone. But the last couple of years, we've seen, he's certainly a good pro, and he's, you know, he plays the NHL game, and he does the put the puck in good places and don't get caught out of position stuff. But the creativity part of his game, I know it's there because I've seen it. And it's kind of gone MIA to an extent, and you might as well at least find out, let's put it that way, and maybe giving him the shot that Leon got last year in his contract year would be a good move to at least see what happens.
I'm a little bitter, just a wee bit, not a whole. I've had some bitter thoughts, Bruce, about the great treatment Draisaitl got last year. Just I have to tell you that. And what I'm worried about is it's weird because when you're a fan of the team, you have to think about the cap so much. So I think, okay, make sure whatever you do this year, Todd McClellan, keep Milan Lucic on the top power play unit and keep Patrick Maroon on the second one because Lucic is already getting paid and Maroon isn't.
Right.
Whatever you do, coach, make sure you get RNH out there a lot on the power play. And Jesse Puljujärvi and Drake Kajula, not so much. And Anton Slepyshev, nope. Ryan Strom, no, we're not. We're going to keep Letestu there on that spot and let him play out the last year of his deal and score 10 or 11 power play goals. And we're just going to roll that way. And I know that's kind of a sick and twisted way to think about your team, but that's where I'm at, Bruce.
That's what it would look like if the GM ran the bench. But in Edmonton, they clearly are, they have a separation of duties, and that is nowhere more apparent than in the deployment of Draisaitl last year, which was from a contract perspective kind of suicidal. And yet from making the team as good as possible, obviously that's where McClellan was leaning, and you really can't argue with the results. So.
If Matt Benning is on the power play, Bruce, I'm not gonna be happy. If he scores, I'll be happy, but then I won't be happy.
Right.
It's one of those
better to have Eric Greiba out there, so he's not going to kill you with bonus money, right?
Exactly.
Or wins.
Crushed it. Yeah. keep. I would rather Chris Russell on the power play. I actually would. He signed, and he also can be a good power play guy, I think. So, you know, if you're flipping a coin and playing a hunch, I actually don't want these thoughts standard in the coach's head. The coach has to only think about winning, I believe. Yeah. But as a fan, right, we both wear the coach and GM hat simultaneously. So I think other people have had these thoughts too. So they're not that horrific. Okay. So Maroon's in a contract year. That's a good first line, though. I think a Maroon, I think, will do a lot of the heavy lifting in the defensive zone. Even though he's the one guy who isn't a center, I think he'll play center a lot in the defensive zone. He will be down low doing those battles quite a bit, as he was when he was with McDavid and Draisaitl, freeing up RNH and McDavid to lead the attack.
Yeah, Maroon, he's for real. You know, at least he was able to keep up with McDavid in terms of, you know, that he was the best winger for McDavid last year, but he did the best away from McDavid from almost any of the guys that played with McDavid a lot. He actually, I know you love Corsi, he actually had a better Corsi away from McDavid than with him, which is, you know, kind of astonishing. And he was, whoever he played with, he pushed the play in a positive direction. He's been an outscorer and an outshooter, and brings that power game as well. Like, what a nice player for 1.5 million.
I really like that line of Maroon, Draisaitl, and Puljujarvi in the first 10 games of last year. Mm-hmm. And wish they had, part of me wishes they had just kept that line through the year. But so be it. I mean, turned out okay, didn't it? So I was tempted in my own fantasy line combinations to have that line together, but instead I put Lucic, Draisaitl, and Puljujarvi on the second line, Bruce. And my thinking is that Puljujarvi could use the help. They need to shelter him by not having him on the top line,
right,
against the top D, but playing with good players, and Leon Draisaitl is one hell of a good hockey player. And I think Draisaitl and Lucic complement one another. All three of those players can forecheck and puck protect. And Draisaitl is I think he's a strong defensive center. So that's my
three
second
big
line.
Three big dudes, eh?
Gotta love it.
They could play keep away for a good long time, I think, when they set their minds to it.
Yeah, and Puljujarvi is fast where Lucic is slow. Mm-hmm. So the line works in that way as well. They have a guy that can really, really fly out there. So I'm liking that. So we had Craig Button weigh in on Puljujarvi, Bruce. He was on Jason Greger's show. And there's this thing which Oiler fans say, which is really, we've learned this the hard way, that you don't want to go with young players too much or give them a job they haven't earned. And I get that thinking. But I also think you have to be careful because you don't want to block young players who are ready. Yeah. Like Darnell Nurse, Matt Benning, and Puljujarvi. And that's what Button's message was loud and clear, is that he just thinks Puljujarvi is a better player than Drake Kajula or Slepyshev right now, mm-hmm, and has higher upside. And so his quote is, I'm going with the guy that can give me the most. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, he's inexperienced. The hell with inexperienced. The guy can play. He's been a real good player. He was the MVP at the World Junior Tournament. He was the top player in his age group. He played in the Senior League in Finland. He's ready. I don't care about this year. Put him in there and live with the growing pains and let him play. So, Bruce, I agree with Craig Button. I don't want to see, that was a disaster, honestly, what happened with Puljujarvi last year. They pulled it out of the fire by finally sending him to the AHL. Now, maybe he had a contract that stipulated him being in the NHL.
I think he did.
I think he did too. So
it's the only rationale that makes any sense out of what.
I agree. I don't think we're not dealing with a dumb coach here. We're dealing with a really excellent, smart coach. So I don't think that they screwed this up that badly on purpose. But that was the net effect, and that's the way the money game is played in the NHL right now. But I really want to see him. I think he did play as well as in the regular season as Slepyshev and Kajula. Now those two players had really good playoffs, so that's left a big indelible mark in everyone's mind. But I'm going to suggest that's a little bit of recency bias, and that I think that Puljujarvi had a lot of good games last year, and Slepyshev and Kajula had times when they really struggled. So we're looking at three players who are in a similar place, but one's a whole heck of a lot younger and has a much higher upside. So,
mm-hmm. Well, all three, I mean, I touched on this in my article in terms of guys that were rookies for the Oilers. And all three of those guys sort of played through their rookie status last year. Puljujarvi the least. He just barely played the 25 games.
Yeah.
But they're all going to be better for that experience. And the same goes with Benning and Nurse, too, for that matter. There's guys sprinkled throughout the lineup that are better players now than they were a year ago. And I'm all for giving them a chance, but if you give them a chance within a structure, like most of those guys got their looks in the bottom six, and that was what they probably needed. It wasn't like, okay, Justin Schultz, you're here. We want you to play first pairing minutes right from the start. We think you belong in the lineup. We're going to get you in the lineup. And they did that certainly with Kajula. And they slotted the other guys in and out. And I think all three are ready to take a step up this year, and they're going to be competing with each other for that ice time.
Yeah, it doesn't. I like the Jokinen signing because it's not a player that you necessarily definitely have to play. Like it's a, he's trending down. He's 34. Maybe he helps the team a lot. Maybe he doesn't. But if he's in the press box, like no one's, you know, it's not a major league stinko over story. Like it might be with a bigger name player. So it gives Kujula, Slepyshev, and Puljujarvi just, and Kyra, all of those guys have real opportunity to get playing time this year, and Strome as well. So. Okay, the third line, Bruce, I have Cassian, Strome, and Kujula. So I have Strome at center, not having, I still haven't done my homework and watched the guy play, but he's apparently a natural center. Shirelli's talked about him being center. Mm-hmm. I really like Cassian. I think he's, you know, can handle third line duties, and I think Kujula can handle third line duties, so that's the line there.
I see Kujula as a top nine forward based on what we saw last year. He was obviously one in training last year, but he's a guy. He's got a lot of breadth to his game in that he played center, he played wing, he even played some right wing. He played power play, he played penalty kill, all as a straight out of college NHL rookie. And that's the guy, and he gets his chances. Holy moly, he seems to get a couple of good scoring chances most games. And it's just a matter of learning to cash a significant percentage enough of them to be a 15 or 20 goal man. I think his game, like he's got the speed, he's got a little edge to his game. He draws penalties. There's a lot going on in that guy.
So you see him as a top line player or a top nine?
Top nine. Oh, okay. Player. Somewhere in the top nine.
Because he did great with McDavid in a few games on the top line, and mm-hmm. and you know what?
It's not impossible. It could be Connor Sheary.
The question is, how does he see himself? Because if he sees himself as, hey, I could be Esa Tikkanen to McDavid and let's say Puljujärvi's Gretzky and Curry. Like I could be the guy who hangs back a bit, does the dirty work, the back checking, is a pain in the butt for the opposition, does some checking and scores a bit. If he sees himself in that role, and I think that's how he should see himself, he could really be an asset even on the top line in that role.
Hey, maybe he sees himself as Jake Guentzel.
Jake Guentzel.
I don't know how to pronounce it. That guy that scored all those goals in the playoffs for the Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, that caught lightning every year. Yeah, every year a slayer is born, only to disappear the following September. We'll see. Maybe he'll keep it going.
Connor Sheary had a good second year though, didn't he? I mean, that's the kind
until
of
the playoffs. Then he got benched.
That's true. That's the kind of bargain though that you're looking for. Out of these college signings, it's just some guy or two guys that are going to come in and seize the opportunity. But Julio's got a pretty decent fighting chance to being that sort of player.
He's got wheels. He's got some skill, and he's competitive. So he seems smart. I like him. Yeah, I like the player a lot. Okay, on the fourth line, I have Jokinen, Letestu, and Slepyshev. So two Swiss Army knives and one bulldozer in training. I mean, I see why people are excited about Slepyshev based on his playoff performance. He really increased his work rate and his drive. He just really came alive. And if he can do that consistently, maybe he could be a top nine forward in the NHL. I mean, I honestly didn't really see that. I know he's got his fans. I didn't see that top nine consistency. I might have seen flashes, but I sure didn't see it enough to think he's a top nine player in the NHL. But in the playoffs, there was more of those flashes, way more of them.
A lot of the line combos that I see have Slepyshev in the top nine and Cassian on the fourth line. I kind of am in your camp, I think, in terms of where they rate on the depth chart. Cassian's a better position to get more regular minutes, but some people really, really like Slepyshev, and I think he's got miles to go, but he's certainly promising.
Yeah, it's for, of course, it's for every player. It's a big year. You know, that's the cliche. It's a big year for Slepyshev. It's, well, it's a big year for every player, because if they don't perform, they get Benoit Pouliotted, right? You know, you don't perform and you're like, that's it, right? There's very little patience and people turn on you fast. All right. The depth chart, Kyra and Pakarinen. Who else is in the running, Bruce? Anyone else did I miss?
Well, I think Brad Malone, you know, I look at him, 28 years old, 176 NHL games. He can play center. He can play wing. He can kill penalties. Like, he's a greasy guy too. Like, he's got a little bit of Matt Hendricks in his game. And there, I mean, Kara maybe has more Matt Hendricks in his game, but they're, you know, they're looking to replace Hendricks. They're looking to replace Anton Lander. You're talking about players of that ilk just down at the bottom end of the roster. And
yeah,
having close to 200 games of NHL experience, age 28, you know, that's a guy who should be somewhere pretty close to his peak.
Looks like he and Kyra and Pakarinen will be battling it out. I wonder if the Oilers will go with 23 men on the roster. Like, to save cap space, I think you're allowed to have fewer players than that, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I bet you the Oilers do that. Well, it depends on how pressing the cap needs are, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly probably see in years to come, maybe more than next year. Okay, so defense. Top of the pops, we have the pairing of Klefbom and Larson, and everyone's just gets this little smile on their face and a secret warmth and joy spreads through them as they think of these two great players mm-hmm. signed for such a, by NHL standards, modest amount of money, long-term heading into the prime of their careers. So I asked Travis Yost, who called that one of the worst trades ever.
Oh yeah.
If he still thought that, and he backed off that a little bit.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. He's from TSN. He's an analytics guy for TSN.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Certainly know he is.
I know you do, but in case
people... Oh, right. Okay, I'm surprised. He usually stands pretty hard on his positions, and that's good to know that there's some room to move there. I mean, you can still hate the trade, but you don't have to, like, say 100-0 is the worst trade ever. You can say, I think New Jersey won the trade, and that's a legit stance, of course.
I don't have his tweet in front of me, but it was something along the lines. He worked out better than he thought it was going to for the Oilers, but he still thinks it's a bad trade. That was his thought.
Right.
You know, 80 to 90% of the people who watched the Oilers closely last year, I think if you ask them what they think of the trade now, they say that trade was a win for the Oilers. Now, that doesn't mean that the trade wasn't also a win for the Devils. It could be. You could have both teams winning a trade, I think. It's one way to look at it. So maybe those people think, a lot of those people think Jersey got a good deal out of that as well. But in Edmonton, people who watch the team day in, day out, and they are some of the most knowledgeable hockey fans on earth, they like that trade, Bruce.
Yeah, well, it's like the, I call them occasionally the Swedish Gator, and I'm not sure he's not the best right shooting Oilers defenseman since Jason Smith. You could make a case for Jeff Petrie, although you could also make the case that we haven't seen the best of Jeff Petrie, whereas we did see the best of Gator, and we will see the best of Adam Larson. But there was such a void on the back end here for so many years that even the people that hated to see Hall go, and I'm one of those, absolutely loved seeing the guy come in and fill not just the spot, but fill in opposing players from time to time. Just play sort of a dirt mean, hard defensive game. I know this old goalie I got all day for that kind of player. Love it. Love Gator. Love
and
Larson.
I thought his Larson's puck moving got better as the year went on.
He got more aggressive. He got more aggressive pinching into the zone and stuff.
I think they rubbed off on each other. I really think they brought out the best in each other with Klefbom giving less gap to players as the year went on, especially in the playoffs, getting to be a better defensive player and Larson becoming a better offensive player. So we're, you know what? The Oilers, for the first time in years, Bruce, have a solid number one defense pairing who I think can get the job done against tough competition. And wow, that's fantastic for this team. So in the second hole, we have Andre Sekera. and Chris Russell. Sakura now is talking about being back in November, I understand, which
end of November, yeah.
Yeah. So that's good news. That's excellent news. He was probably in the regular season best Oilers defenseman in the regular season, most consistent. Not in the playoffs. Got outplayed by both Russ Klefbom and Larson, but key player. And then we have Chris Russell back. And you know, in looking at some of the other contracts that were signed, Bruce, the Vlasic contract, as great a player as Mark Edward Vlasic is, 8 years at $7 million. Kind of put Russell's deal in context, I thought. And if Russell had been a UFA, I think he would have got it, at least the contract he got with the Oilers. So,
well, there's this site, there's this guy out on the analyst out there, Matt Kane. I don't know if you follow him. He's at Kane_Matt.
Yeah.
And he writes for Hockey Graphs and other places. And he did these projected salaries for various free agents. And you know what? He came up with Chris Russell, $4.5 million, showing the Oilers actually signing him at $500,000 less than his value. And I sure in the hell wasn't expecting that. But it was somewhat...
That's what Alzner got, isn't it?
Surprising. Yeah, well, yeah, Alzner got 4.6. So, but that was his projected value of Russell. Mind you, I think that's in the here and now. It doesn't take into account we're talking 4 years down the road. But still, I was half expecting, oh, here it's going to come a list, and Chris Russell's going to be shown as being the worst ever. And actually, he didn't even show up on that side of the equation at all. He showed up on the bargain side. Shocking, really.
Chris Russell. Let me just, I did a list here of contracts, Bruce. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my kids are home. They're at camp all day. I'm just telling them to.
Okay.
Mind their P's and Q's. So, Alzner, yeah, 5 years, $4.6 million. He's 29. He's a year younger this season than Russell is going to be.
Right.
And Kulikov, of course, 3 years at $4.3 million. He's 26. So, Alzner played 1947 minutes, 1947. Mm-hmm. And Russell played 21-13. Russell got... per game, 0.19 points per game. Alzner got 0.16 points per game. Brendan Smith, 0.18 points per game. He played 19-15 per game, and he got $4.4 million over four. Jeez. He's 28. So the Russell contract, whatever else you want to say about it, and I'm not in love with it because that.
No, I'm not either.
I really love the way that...
I'm not in love with the market the way it is right
no,
now.
No, that's the market. It's the free agent market, right? That's what you pay. The Oilers were in tough with Sekera's injury, but still I'm a little... Of course, I'm worried about... I just think Benning and Nurse are coming on. I don't want to... I think those guys can play in the top four, and where are they going to play? How can the Oilers keep them? So this is a big issue.
So who plays in Sekera's spot for the first few weeks with Russell? Do you bring up Nurse, or do you bring up Benning and put Russell on his natural side?
I think the temptation is going to be to put Russell on his natural side, isn't it? Because and Benning has also played in the playoffs, that the choice was made to go with Benning.
They played them together, yeah, and they were pretty good.
And I have Nurse really struggled in the playoffs. Now, he after the summer, he may get his legs back. I mean, he was coming off a major injury, Darnell Nurse, and people... There's a real kind of negative feeling about Nurse right now, I note, with Oilers fans, with some Oilers fans especially. But just overall, I think he's a little devalued because he didn't have a good playoff. He had a poor playoffs in a lot of ways. He was tentative, nervous. But he was like a month and a half out from coming back from a major three-month, you know, from surgery, from a major injury. So, I mean, I'm not putting too much... weight on what I saw at the end of the year. I'm putting a lot of weight on and the great improvement I saw from him at the beginning of the year.
Let's hope that's the guy that comes back in September.
I don't have any. I have very little doubt that that's going to be the case. I think he's going to be shooting on back. So the depth defenders, Bruce, are Graba, Ryan Stanton, Johan, and Mark Faye. I didn't even try that. Johan
Ovitu. I heard him on the radio today.
Ovitu?
Yeah.
Okay, Johan Ovitu and Mark Fain. So, some people were fans were hoping that Mark Fain, you know, he has his fans out there, and they were hoping he'd get back on the roster. It's looking less likely with every one of these signings. I think Ovitu was a smart signing. He really feels he's a very Jordan Osterley type player, mm-hmm. and really he's so yeah. similar that and I was thinking that, you know, Jordan Osterley might be in the running for a roster spot this year because that guy can really play.
Oh, that's a good match, though. I've been thinking of him as Marc-Andre Bergeron, but Osterley is a more recent guy that plays, I think, somewhat comparable in terms of the skating and the puck moving. I can't say that I've seen him play a whole lot, mind you, but the fancy stats on this guy are real good. And he stood out on New Jersey compared to their defense group, despite playing only 25 games. So it's small sample, and he was probably sheltered, and yet the puck went north a lot more on his watch. He had a plus on a badly minus team. And he was a positive shot generator.
Excellent. Good plus. Signing, eh? Like,
well, for the league minimum, I mean, how can you go wrong? You want to have some depth? Well, there's depth. 27 years old. He's not got a lot of NHL experience, but he's been a pro for a lot of years. He played in the Finnish league, and you know he's not coming in here as some 21-year-old neophyte kid. So
we'll two signings that could really help the Oilers down the road. You know, it's those kind of players that when you get injuries and you're in the playoffs and you need to compete for the Stanley Cup, he could be the third pairing defenseman for the Oilers, and Jokinen could be on the he could be on the first line. So those are the small little moves that a GM has to make, and hopefully he's picked the right two players. I haven't seen these two players. I haven't watched them closely, so I'm not gonna. But they just from their numbers and from the general vibe, they sound like they were really good signings. So,
or maybe he hits a home run with somebody like Mitch Callahan or Brian Ferland. Who knows? I mean, we don't know these players, but they're depth players that are at least close to the right age of, they're not going to be kids learning on the job. These are going to be guys somewhere near their physical peak. And even if that peak is fourth line NHLer, well, you'd rather have them playing that position at that age than going out and getting Jared Smithen when he's already 34 years old.
So we're getting to the point, Bruce, where we're going to have a poll on what fans thought about Shirelli's summer.
Oh, David, you didn't tell me who you had listed as the Oilers' starting goaltender in October. What is your line combinations for goalies?
I hardly ever talk about the goalies.
A, because it's a bloody slam dunk in terms of who's going to be doing what.
No, my only fear with Cam Talbot is, like, you know, what's he going to get paid 2 years from now? But that's kind of a long way off, so I'll worry about that then. Yep. And Brassois, he's got a lot to prove this year. But he starts proving it, there's
big year for Brassois.
Big year for Talbot.
Yeah. Bigger year for Talbot, yeah. Can he do it again?
Just think about it. Is there any player that you could say, yeah, it's not a big year for blank? It's just doesn't exist. It's not a, well, not I guess really. It's not a big not really. Year. Guess what? Someone's if, just in money terms, once someone signed that long-term deal like Connor McDavid, it's not a big year for Connor McDavid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's set whether he has a good year or a bad one. Yeah,
he'll just cruise through. He's not going to worry. You know, whatever. Show up for practice, maybe. You know, maybe not. We'll see. It's because it doesn't matter. It's not a big year. Okay. Alrighty. So what would you give Shirelli, Bruce? Like, let's give him out of 10. A mark out of 10. It's hard. It's premature, I know, because the Draisaitl contract isn't done. And that's the avoiding the offer sheet. We can already give him the marks for avoiding the offer sheet, though.
Up till now.
Yeah, well, he's done all he... I guess he could not have... You know, people would say, well, he signed Chris Russell. He didn't have to do that. So, but you're not going to pay Draisaitl $18 million or $16 million. Like, no. I guess you could have kept Jordan Eberle.
Yeah, I could have.
And not signed Chris. I mean, you could have kept Eberle and not signed Chris Russell. You know, in the end, Bruce, I looked at it all again. And I do these power rankings of the players.
Yeah.
And for 2 years now, I've had, like, Eberle was eighth overall 2 years ago, which is, for a guy making $6 million, that's as low as you want to go on your team, especially a team that was as bad as the Oilers that year, yeah. is eighth. This year, I had him about 15th.
Wow.
And so they had to move. You just can't have a player like that earning that amount of money when you're running into cap issues and he's underperforming like that, you know. I was on the fence, and part of this is that I'm an Oilers fan, so I back whatever management does as long as it's even as long as it's reasonable. I give them the benefit of the doubt, put it that way. But from my own view of watching Eberle last year, when I looked at how I was consistently ranking this guy over 10 different rankings, he wasn't even close to making his money. The only guy, big money guys who were worse were Pouliot, who was down like 21st, and Fane, who was unranked. And we know what the Oilers think of those guys, and the rest of the league thinks of them. So they had a chance to move Eberle for something, and they took it. And I think, and you have these young right wingers, Puljujarvi, Kajula, Slepyshev. I like the move now. I'm good with it. That's where I end up. How about you?
Well, I'm interested to see what Ryan Strome brings to the table. And, I mean, the jury's out on that part. In terms of making the trade, well, Eberle's value was not particularly high. In one way, this was a poor time to trade him. And another, if the time had come and they were able to salvage an NHL player. And, you know, in a right-shooting right-winger who can also play center with some draft and scoring pedigree behind him. It's not like Strome is a nobody. But I don't think New York felt like they'd unlocked a real player they had there either. So it's kind of a exchange of just let's give each of these guys a new lease on life and hope that he kicks it up a notch. I think Eberle and Tavares, they could be dynamite.
Yeah, you know, Eberle could easily get, 65 points, maybe even as many as 70, like if he really caught fire, who knows. Based on two, like, you know, the critics of the deal will say, well, it's just based on a bad playoff, you move the guy. Well, no, that's not what I
said. Tough year before the bad playoffs.
Yeah, and it was a bad year the year before, which was only salvaged by a really hot run with Connor McDavid. So there was about six good in 2015-16. There was a 2 month period that was really pretty good, and the rest of it was really pretty disheartening for Eberle. So this was a long time coming, and it finally came in. And that's why I think there's a few people who still get upset about it, but you hardly hear anything about it. Like, remember with Taylor Hall, Bruce, every time there's been an interview.
I remember last week and yesterday about Taylor Hall. Like, it's never going
to
stop.
No, it's just, if you want to pick a fight, just, you know, mention Taylor Hall on Twitter. Eberle, you'll get a few people, but it's just not as heated. I just think the heat's gone out of it. I think people get what happened there. It was a trade that was made for a number of really solid reasons and time to move along. So I'm going to say I'm going to give Shirelli, 8 out of 10 for the summer. And that's based on signing McDavid to a value contract, what I see as a value contract. It's so far doing all the right things in the Draisaitl trade negotiation, which is non-escalation and clearing cap space. And it's moving out Eberle on a decent deal. I'd give him a higher mark if he had moved out Pouliot for less. Maybe I'll give him a 7. I'm changing my mind. I'm
going to give him I was thinking 7 myself.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a
cap hit for 4 years has left me a little nonplussed. But,
yeah, I'm doing this on the fly, so I'm going to change my mark to a 7. Maybe, you know, you get bumped up a little bit again for Jokinen and Ovutu.
Yeah, well, I was going to say losing Davidson and Reinhardt both kind of sticks in my craw. And that wasn't just from the summer. That was like a two-step maneuver, right? It's so like Russian roulette with two bullets. And anyway, all it will take is for one of these guys like Stanton or Ogitu to step in and take that and Charlie gets exonerated. But I don't have the knowledge or the expectations of those guys that I did of the other films that I watched coming up, you know, for years in the WHL. So
yeah, I'm gonna stick with
a personal bias until we see how those other guys work out. But I wasn't too happy with that.
You gonna drop him to a six?
Well, I think the McDavid contract. I mean, I don't know how much of the credit for that goes to Shirelli, but it looks good on the whole team and McDavid. I think the way that worked out. And he's
well, the GM certainly gets blamed if he screws up the contract, right? Mm-hmm. That's blamed.
Yeah, well, if Dreisaitl gets away, that mark falls in a real hurt.
Yeah, that's
so far. I mean, you don't want him just selling the farm and saying, "Well, so just we'll sign this Leon and you fill in your figure." You know, like the Red Wings used to do with Gordie Howe in reverse. You can't be doing that. So, you know, you're going to need a hard negotiation. And he's good at keeping it dispassionate. He just talks about the facts. And I'm pretty sure it would be the same way over a negotiating table. But, you know, things getting heated, like these previous negotiations that we talked about, Mike Comrie, Ryan Smith, other, you know, you don't need that.
You had some hot-tempered guys there at the negotiating table.
That. Yeah, well, that's right. And I mean, Kevin Lowe, I mean, I got lots of time for Kevin Lowe, but mild-mannered is not a word I would use to describe him. He's as competitive as it comes, and it worked to his disadvantage as a manager a few times.
All righty, Bruce. So next up for the call to hockey is just to kind of play out the string on summer news. And then we're going to shift.
The team is set 2 months before the season.
Yeah. We're going to shift into prospect mode. So we do it every year in August, we pretty much have a post every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's what people can expect as we move mm-hmm. towards August, is there'll be one post a day at the Cult of Hockey, and it will be our ranking and a little assessment and prognostication of each Oilers prospect, and we will rank them from 1 to 30 or 35, whatever we usually do. So that's another feather in Shirelli's cap. I like that Yamamoto pick. You know, mm-hmm. I like the idea, but I don't know the player. But you take the top point per game player in junior draft age junior player. You know, that's probably a pretty good idea. Overall. Most years, that's the best idea. So,
22nd overall. I mean, it's not often you find that guy down there, and hopefully, it's a home run.
Yeah,
it certainly took a big cut at it, and sometimes I respect that more than a so-called safe pick of Ryan O'Mara. He was a safe pick; you can't miss.
Alex Plott. Right?
Anyway, it's part of the equation for sure.
Peter Soberlak, Kim Issel, Scott Metcalf.
Yeah, I remember all these guys. Jason Souls.
Michael Heinrich.
Yanni Rita. Alexei Mikhnov. I could go on all day, David, with these guys.
I was about to say Boyd Devereaux, but that might be selling the Boydster short.
Oh, yeah. No,
he played about 600 NHL games, didn't he, or some darn thing.
He was an NHL player. He played with the Red Wings and was an okay player. I wouldn't tar him with that brush.
No.
But, hopefully they got at least a solid base hit with Yamamoto, and he could be the home run.
Boyd Devereaux. Let's just see how many games he played in the NHL. 627.
Good call.
Alrighty, Bruce. On that high note. Me actually getting that right or close to it.
It's a buy note now.
On that high note, we move to the buy note. Correct. Thanks, Bruce. Good to talk to you. And we'll probably have a few podcasts during the summer. Less to talk about, so we will do it less. Mm-hmm. but maybe once every second week. Something like that. How does that sound?
Something's going to happen at some point, for sure.
Yeah, we can always talk Oilers. We got no trouble doing that.
Yep.
And in the meantime, and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.